told my wife a while ago, my head is full of dates and kings' names from looking at the part of the Old Testament survey that we want to consider this evening. You recall the last Sunday in November, we began looking at an Old Testament survey, and that Sunday evening we spent looking at the book of Genesis, which basically took us 2,700 years. And as you make note, the book of Genesis and the book of Job most likely is also contained during that time, written at that point in the history of the world. And we talked about the beginning, and we made mention as we were talking about that we needed to take note of some names in particular: Adam, Noah, and Abraham. We also added in there Adam's son Seth, because he's the descendant through whom all things happen. And then Noah, we added his son Shem. And when we talked about Abraham, we talked about Isaac and Jacob as well, because they are the ones through whom the promise was given. In fact, Adam, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob all received the promise in some form or another regarding the Savior. I say Adam, I guess technically it was Eve that received the promise of her seed. And then we moved on in December, I guess it was, and we looked at the children of Israel in the bondage in Egypt and the wilderness wanderings. And there we also added in the names Moses and Joshua. We talked about those things, and that took us another 100 years or so after the Egyptian bondage, and of about 430 years, and coming out of that and wandering in the wilderness those 40 years, they came to the edge of the land of Canaan. And I will mention, if you've been marking these dates somewhere in your notes, you may notice my years are different than they were, because in my research, all the things I could find in talking about the kings, everything showed up about 45 years different than what I had on these charts. And I couldn't find where I found those dates for these charts back years ago when I first did them. And so I made some adjustments to the years. But as we stated, all of these dates are approximations. There's no definitive time. They're based on counting up generations and such, oftentimes. But then, just at the end of January, we talked about the conquest of Canaan. In fact, I think I had that lesson titled, Taking the Land, because it was the time frame of Joshua. And then we talked about the time frame of the judges, and we made mention of all the judges and how those are contained there in the books of Judges, and also made mention that the book of Ruth takes place during this time frame of the book of Judges, and the things that happened during that time frame. And as you look at the times up there, you see we've got another 300 years or so that's taken place during the days of the judges. But that only brings us up to the very beginnings of the nation of Israel. We've got them becoming a nation. We've got them receiving the land during the days of the judges. But what we have following this is the time frame that we might consider the promised nation. Not just having the land, not just being in the place that God had promised to Abraham, but beginning that becoming a great nation in influencing the rest of the world. And that brings us to the time frame of the United Kingdom, the kingdom as a whole. And if you look there, there's a number of books that are written during and about that particular time. I'm not sure exactly what time frame in here, and nobody else is for that matter, these particular books were written. But the time frame they cover is this time frame of the United Kingdom. You notice Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, and Song of Solomon being included there. Those were written by David and Solomon, as well as other writings that we don't have any record of. When we talk about the United Kingdom, we're talking about that time frame that begins about 1 Samuel chapter 9 and goes all the way through the book of 2 Samuel and the first 11 chapters of the book of 1 Kings. As I was researching and getting some information regarding kings and which kings ruled when and where, I ran up on Haley's Bible handbook refers to it as a broad outline that kind of clarified a few things that I've had some trouble keeping in line through the years. If you go and read through the scriptures, when you get into the books of 1st and 2nd Chronicles, you start repeating things and trying to keep track of which part of Kings and which part of Chronicles is matched up with each other can get kind of tedious. But in the Bible handbook, basically, he says that 1st and 2nd Samuel are kind of in line with 1st Chronicles. In other words, it talks about the kingdoms of David and Solomon. It begins with the suicide of Saul, 1 Chronicles does. It doesn't talk about Samuel or very much about Saul. But 2 Samuel and then 1 and 2 Kings is kind of equal to 2 Chronicles. In fact, both 1 Kings and 2 Chronicles begin with the reign of Solomon. So we find things about David in 1 and 2 Samuel and in 1 Chronicles, and then we begin talking about Solomon in 1 Kings and in 2 Chronicles. One thing that's noted there, 2 Chronicles ignores the northern kingdom completely. It doesn't talk about the kings and the happenings of the northern 10 tribes. It's of Judah and the things that took place there. And there may be some minor exceptions to some of those things that you would note as you go reading through, but in a general sense, that gives us an idea of how 1st and 2nd Chronicles fall in line with the other books. But when we talk about the United Kingdom, we're talking about the kingdoms of Saul, David, and Solomon. And when you're dividing those out by where they're located in the scripture, you will see that Saul's kingdom is talked about in 1 Samuel chapter 9 through chapter 31. Then David's kingdom is in 2 Samuel in the first chapter or two of 1 Kings. And then the kingdom of Solomon is in the first 11 chapters of 1 Kings. 1 Kings chapter 1 and 2 kind of overlap David and Solomon a little bit. Now, there's a lot of things that took place during the time of these kings. The notable things that most all of us have come to mind when we think Saul was chosen by God. And when we look at the things that are said about Saul as he's being chosen and as Samuel's being instructed who to make king, one of the things that stands out is Saul's looks, where he looked like a king. He was tall, he was handsome, he stood up over the crowd. He was anointed to be king. One of the things that stands out when we start talking about the kingdom of Israel are the warnings that are given by Samuel in 1 Samuel chapter 8. If we return to 1 Samuel chapter 8 and begin reading there about verse 10 or 11, we see many things that the king was going to do. He would take their sons and place them in his chariots and among his horsemen. He would give himself command over thousands and fifties, some for plowing, some for harvest, some to make war, some for equipping his chariots. He would take daughters to be perfumers and cooks and bakers. You read down through there all of these things. And if you go back and look at some of the things that Moses had to say in the book of Deuteronomy about why they ought not have it, or why what would happen when they did have a king. Over in Deuteronomy chapter 17, verse 14 through 20. Deuteronomy 17, I want to go and read there. Verse 14 through 20 of Deuteronomy 17. Instructions for when they had a king. It's part of what Moses gives out here. Beginning in verse 14 of chapter 17. When you enter the land which the Lord your God gives you, and you possess it and live in it, you will say, I will set a king over me, like the nations who are around me. You will surely set a king over you, whom the Lord your God chooses. One from among your countrymen you shall set as a king over yourselves. You may not put a foreigner over yourselves who is not your countryman. Moreover, he shall not multiply horses for himself, nor shall he cause the people to return to Egypt to multiply horses, since the Lord has said to you, you shall never again return that way. He shall not multiply wives for himself, or else his heart will turn away, nor shall he greatly increase silver and gold for himself. It shall come about when he sits on the throne of his kingdom, he shall write for himself a copy of his law, of this law, on a scroll in the presence of the Levitical priest. It shall be with him, and he shall read it all the days of his life, that he may learn to fear the Lord his God by carefully observing all the words of this law and these statutes, that his heart may not be lifted up above his countrymen, and that he may turn aside from the commandment to the right or the left, so that he and his sons may continue long in his kingdom and in the midst of Israel. When you compare that with some of the things that Samuel has to say about the king that would be reigning over Israel as he goes to appoint them a king, as the people ask for a king, you find that many of the things that Samuel talks about the king would do are almost the opposite of what God said a king ought to do. Reason for this is Samuel is giving warning to the people of what a king is going to be like. If they set a king over them like the nations round about, he's going to oppress them. He's going to cause them problems. They were supposed to have God as their king. Certainly when we study much about Samuel, we recognize that he was very saddened when Israel chose to have a king. So remember, God said, they've not rejected you, they've rejected me as king over them. This all at the beginning of the kingdom. Saul taking over and becoming king, fought some battles. He was given some instructions by God, some things that he was supposed to do, some things that stand out that Saul did that were wrong. In particular, he offered sacrifice because he got tired of waiting for Samuel to get there. And certainly we remember the events that surround the Amalekites and Saul's decision to save some of those things from the Amalekites and the king and blaming it on the people. And as a result of this, his kingdom was taken away. In fact, very early in his reign, he was told, you're going to lose your kingdom. And Samuel was sent to find David. Much of what we read about the time frame of the kingdom of Saul, David was also known to be the one who would take his throne. The interaction between David and Saul takes up a lot of the writing that we find in these books. But eventually Saul lost his life just as was promised. In fact, he and his sons all lost their lives at the same time. One notable thing about their death, their bodies were taken and hung up as a trophy. And there were those of Israel who were brave enough to go and take them back and return them and bury them properly. David took over as king. And that takes us into 2 Samuel. David was saddened at the death of Saul. Certainly we've got a lot that we could look at in regards to the time frame of King David. But some of the things that we remember about David actually took place during the reign of Saul. His fight with Goliath. The opportunities that David had to get rid of Saul and the problems that he was causing, that David showed himself to be an honorable man simply because Saul was still God's anointed. David reigned in Hebron for a number of years before he was made king over all of Israel, but he, like Saul, reigned for about 40 years. During his reign, the Israelites spent a lot of time at war, conquering the nations around about them. In fact, when we think about the reigns of David, or of Saul and of David, this is the nation of Israel during the time of Saul, This particular map actually shows a lot of the wars that he was involved in. By the time that David came along, these were the boundaries of the nation of Israel. And you can see that they had spread very much south, very much north, and even to the east from what they were when they first divided the land out. These were because of the wars of Saul and the fighting and such of David. Of course, what stands out for David is his sin with Bathsheba and the things that were involved in regards to that. If you ask most anyone, what's the most notable thing? What do you think about with David? When you hear the name David, what do you think about? Probably Goliath and Bathsheba are going to be two things that come up. They stand out. Of course, they're stories we've been telling ourselves and our children to help us understand the will of God. But also, we have the story of Uzzah during the days of David. David wanted the ark back in Jerusalem. It's where it belonged. Of course, the problem with Uzzah is they moved the ark in a manner that was not in accordance with God's plan by people who were not God's planned carriers of the ark. Uzzah lost his life. David's kingdom is known for its warrior type attitude, for its constant war. And because of that, he was not allowed to build the temple of God. But God did tell him he could allow his son to build him a place, to build him a home. And certainly that's what happened. And that takes us to the kingdom of Solomon. I told you I had all kinds of king's names going around in my head. Solomon. Wait till we start talking about some of these others. Solomon, the son of David. Now, when we look at the story of how Solomon became king, we recognize some of the conflict in the house of David is already beginning to show itself. Certainly it has during the days of David. But when David started getting old, one of his sons decided he was going to be king. He went and called his friends together and they proclaimed him king. Of course, Nathan, Bathsheba came to David. Stories told how they came to him and told him what was going on and reminded him of the promise he had made to Bathsheba that her son Solomon would be king. And David instructed that Solomon be anointed king. And when the word got to the son that had wanted to be king instead, he was upset. All his friends ran away because they knew what the result would be. Solomon was anointed as king. And certainly the story that stands out about Solomon, especially at the beginning of his reign as king, is when God asked, "What can I do for you? What would you have me do?" And Solomon said, "Make me wise so that I can rule your people." And we understand that when that took place, God told Solomon not just would he make him wise, but he would also make him rich. And Solomon was the richest of all the kings of Judah. This is pretty much the borders and boundaries of the land of Egypt, or land of Canaan, that belonged to the Israelites during this time. It looks smaller, but that's because the map is blown out more to show more of it. This is pretty much the same area that was showing on the map of David that we were looking just a short while before. During this time, it was a very prosperous time. Solomon, as well as David and Saul, had been told by God that if they would serve God with all their might, their kingdom would last forever. Their descendants would reign. And they would stand as a strong and powerful kingdom throughout all of the ages. But as we know, Solomon's weakness was foreign women. He became adulterated by them, and he began to worship their gods, and he fell out of favor with God. And Jeroboam was told, "You'll get part of the kingdom when Solomon's days have ended." And that brings us to the time frame that starts out about chapter 12 of 1 Kings and goes all the way through the book of 2 Kings. Almost all the way through to about chapter 20, the time of the divided kingdom. When I was looking at this survey and how much of a lesson I wanted to do this evening, I contemplated where to stop. And then I reminded myself, this is a survey. We don't want to get too detailed in things, but just a survey to help us put things together and get an idea of how they fall in place. And once again, we have the books that are from this time frame. You notice the books of the prophets, Obadiah, Joel, Jonah, Amos, Hosea, Micah, Isaiah, as well as the books of 1 and 2 Kings and 2 Chronicles. Two prophets that are from this time frame that aren't mentioned here because they don't have their own books, Elijah and Elisha. Now, I'm not going to spend any time talking about the prophets and what they did. Brother John's been doing a fine job of that. But understand the events that Brother John's been talking about as he talked about the various prophets, particularly Elijah and Elisha, took place during the divided kingdom years, for the most part, much of them. They fall in this time frame. And we look, there's a little less than 300 years for the divided kingdom. There were a number of kings on both sides during this time frame. Some of these, y'all may not even can read those names on the screen there. Some of these names stand out to us. Jeroboam, Ahab, Jehoahaz, Hoshea on the divided kingdom side. They stand out. Maybe partially because they were some of the longer reigning kings. One thing we want to note, there were several what might be referred to as dynasties in the divided kingdom, especially in the kingdom of the northern 10 tribes. Jeroboam reigned for 22 years, and then his son Nadab reigned for 2 years. Then Baasha took over for 24 years, and his son Eliah reigned for 2. Then there was a guy named Zimri, and if you could read this, it says he reigned for a week. He was king for 7 days. And that's all. And then came Omri. And this is the beginning of one of the longer dynasties in the northern 10 tribes. Omri, maybe we don't think much about, but his son Ahab, we've heard a lot about him. When we talk about Jeroboam, who began the kingdom, certainly he was told by God, if you will serve me and follow me, your kingdom will be strong. Your children will reign. Your sons will reign forever. But as we know, when you start reading about Jeroboam, he looked and said, if I let these people go back to Jerusalem, they're going to go back to Rehoboam, and I'm not going to have a kingdom anymore. So he gave them a place to worship in their kingdom. In fact, he gave them 2 places to worship. And it's in this time frame when we have the story of the young prophet that came and prophesied against Jeroboam at one of his altars. And then that prophet is the one that was tricked by the older prophet. Like I said, I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about prophets because Brother John's been doing a fine job of that. But it was during this time frame that that took place. Ahab, a very wicked king, maybe because of his wife. Maybe Ahab wasn't so bad on his own, but his wife Jezebel sure didn't help him be any better. During that time, there was much that went wrong with the nation of Israel. It was during that time that Elijah prophesied and brought the drought. Ahab reigned for 22 years, and then a son, Ahaziah, took his place for 2 years, and then another, Jehoram, reigned for 12. Now, if you've been taking note of or can see where the scriptures are here, that brings us all the way into 2 Kings. And just looking at the northern 10 tribes. But now, during that time frame, there have been a number of kings in Judah. Started with Rehoboam. He's the reason that they divided. Because he didn't listen to the advice of the old men, he listened to the advice of his friends. He wanted to tax and caused the people more difficulty and struggle, and the kingdom divided. He reigned for 17 years. Abijam reigned for 3, and then a fellow named Asa reigned in Israel for some 41 years. When we look at the difference between the kings of Israel and the kings of Judah, what we find is there were some of the kings of Judah who did good in the sight of God. Some of them, it even makes mention, they did right. And they cleaned out the sacrifices and the altars and such, as Brother John pointed out. They didn't clear out the high places, though. One stands out for that. He did. But when we look at the kings of Israel, every single one of them was evil in the sight of God. None of them followed after God as they ought to have. Continuing back with the northern tribes, we get Jehu after Jehoram for 28 years. Jehoahaz for 17 years. Jehoash for 16 years. Then a Jeroboam II who reigned for 41 years, and following him was Zechariah, reigned for a half a year, and a fellow named Shallum reigned for a month. He got longer than Zimri, but he didn't last for very long at all. Menahem for 10, Pekahiah for 2, Pekah in for 20 years, and then in the reign of Hoshea, who reigned for 9 years, the northern 10 tribes were taken into Babylonian captivity. And the time frame of the divided kingdom came to an end. I wanted to go on and talk about them because there's some things when we go and talk about the kings of Judah that I think we need to take note of. In particular, there's some name confusion between a king of Judah and a king of Israel. And so we need to consider those maybe just a little bit more. But one of the things we know when we talk about Asa, we go back to him. He reigned for 41 years. One of the reasons for that is he removed the cult prostitutes. He removed a lot of the idols and the idol worship. He was one that followed after the way of God, at least to some extent. Maybe that can be the reason that we can notice that he reigned for so long. And then we had Jehoshaphat, who reigned for 25 years after him. Certainly we recognize there was a number of wars in regards to all of these kings in various places. He was loyal to Jehovah. These things are found when we read about Jehoshaphat in the book of 2 Chronicles. Then there was a king, Jehoram. He reigned for 8 years. I guess I should mention there were some of these who were co-regents for a period of time between their sole reigns. But he married a daughter of Ahab. Murders his brethren. Then Ahaziah was a son and successor to Jehoram. He's also called Azariah. But Ahaziah only reigned for 1 year. And then we have a uniqueness in the kingdom of Judah. We don't have a king. We have a queen. Athaliah. And if y'all quote me saying this is exactly the way all these names are supposed to be pronounced, I'm going to tell you, no, don't count on me. But Athaliah was queen over Israel for 6 years. But she wasn't a good queen. She was an evil queen. She had an evil influence. She murdered her grandchildren. And only one saved was Joash, who took her place and was anointed as king at the age of 7. And he reigned for 40 years. And he's one of the reasons I wanted to do the northern tribes and then come do the southern tribe of Judah, because when you read from the scriptures, sometimes you see Joash referred to as Jehoash. And if you notice, there's a Jehoash over here. And look, Joash is in 2 Kings 12 and Jehoash is in 2 Kings 13. They overlap one another. In fact, in reading some of the notes that I have regarding the kings, I came up on a statement that Jehoash, who's also called Joash, was a righteous king. But when you go and read the scriptures that talk about it, you find they're not talking about Jehoash, the king of the northern tribes. The scriptures are talking about this king, Joash. Began reigning when he was 7 years old. He reigned for 40 years. Certainly he had influences with him when he was younger that helped him to stand firm for the Lord. He was one who reformed the nation of Israel, brought them out of much of the idolatry and such, and brought prosperity back into the nation, at least for a short period of time. But even he was not complete in his reformation. Then we have Amaziah, who reigned for 29 years after Joash did. Azariah, or as he's referred to in the Chronicles, Uzziah, reigned for 52 years. Jotham was a king over Judah for 16 years, Ahaz for 16 years, and that brings us to Hezekiah, who was reigning in Judah at the time that Israel was taken into captivity. And he reigned for 29 years. Judah during this time, the two separate kingdoms, much smaller than what we saw with Israel. Much smaller. After Hezekiah, there were a number of kings who reigned as rulers over the southern kingdom of Israel, the kingdom of Judah, Manasseh, Ammon, Josiah, Jehoahaz, Jehoiakim, Jehoiachin, and Zedekiah, who was reigning at the time that they were taken into captivity. Some 40, 50-something years in the time frame of those kings of Judah standing alone. That takes us through the kingdom of Israel. While Judah stood alone, we have the books of Nahum, Zephaniah, Habakkuk, and Jeremiah written, and the stories are recorded in the latter part of 2 Kings and 2 Chronicles. Here's the list of kings who reigned with Judah as the sole kingdom of the people of God. Almost got it done before a quarter till. That brings us to the end of the Samuels and Kings and Chronicles. One of the things I wanted to note, if you were to read these in the original, if we could read these in the original Hebrew, we would find that they were scattered a little differently. Samuel was one book. Actually, it was a number of books because they couldn't get them all on one scroll. Kings was one compilation. Chronicles was a separate compilation written by a different crew. In fact, some say Chronicles was written even later on. It just depends on which expert you want to give attention to as to how they define these books and how they were written. Certainly, I recognize these lessons are not telling us anything spectacular. They're not telling us anything in particular about what it takes for us to be Christians, but they are for the purpose of helping us put together the story. And I think one of the things that we need to keep in mind as we read through the Bible, those names, Adam and Eve, Noah, Moses, Abraham, we got those two out of order, Abraham and then Moses, and David. In fact, if you have trouble remembering names and you want to keep track of the story of Jesus through the scripture, you look for Eve, you look for Abraham, you look for Moses, and you look for David. Those four are the continuation of the story of Jesus and the promises of Jesus through the Old Testament. And when we look at the prophecies that were given to those four individuals, we can see Jesus in the Word of God from the very beginning. We can see that it's pointing to the time when He would come
that bring that salvation that we find in the New Testament scriptures. We don't spend a lot of time in the Old Testament. We have a lot of examples and lessons we can learn from there. Spending time reading about the various kings and whether they served God and what the consequences were, what the rewards were for serving, would do good for us. Help us be reminded that God is with those who serve Him against those who turn away. He will bless us if we devote ourselves to His service, where He will stand against us if we decide we want to go our own way. Song we're about to sing, there's a hope. It's the hope that we all have. Place where we're going so we can be with God for all eternity. A place of rest. We talked this morning about how the transgressor's way has no rest. The way of God's people does have rest. It awaits each of us. But in order to get there, we've got to be faithful to the Lord. We've got to follow the pathway of life that Jesus has laid down. Examples of the Old Testament will help us see how God deals with His people. The teaching of the New Testament scriptures of Jesus and His apostles and His inspired men tell us that we need to follow the law of Christ today. The law of submission, of humility, of love, and a completely devoted service to God at this point. If you look this evening, you find there's things in your life that are amiss that you need to get corrected. If you're struggling and difficulty striving to get through this life, you need a brethren to pray with you and for you. You need to be cleansed of sin by repenting and asking for forgiveness. Opportunity is yours. Come always stand and sing the song for your encouragement.